Welcome to Insider's Guide to Energy Stories. Stories is an archival project where individuals from across the entire energy business share their unique experience. We'll hear firsthand accounts of what it's like to work in industry. You'll find out things that you didn't know, for it is impossible for one individual to know every element of the energy business. But our goal is to provide as clear a view as possible, and at the end of each of these interviews, that you have a unique vantage point that you didn't have at the beginning. If you have a unique story to tell, please don't hesitate to reach out to us and share your story on Insider's Guide to Energy Stories. For now, enjoy the episode.
This episode of Insider's Guide to Energy Stories is sponsored by Vedectus. For more information, please go to www.vedectus.com.
Welcome to the show. I'm delighted to say that we have Tony Pan joining us today. Tony, great to have you here. Would you introduce yourself for us, please?
Hello, I'm Tony Pan, based in Seattle in the United States. And I'm one of the co-founders and also the CEO of a sustainable heat and power technology company called Modern Electron.
Great, okay. So to drill into that a little bit, sustainable heat and power, what is the kind of core product of Modern Electron?
So two things, actually. First of all, our goal is to help the hundreds and millions of buildings worldwide, especially ones that use a lot of heat, and help them lower their carbon emissions, save money at the same time, and provide energy resiliency, especially during blackouts. And we do that by enabling a new solution, which we call the Reserve. But ultimately, what it really does is it takes wasted energy that's already present in a lot of heating systems and converts it into electricity. This raises the efficiency of that process, and therefore, by definition, it saves money. People save on their utility bills, it reduces the CO2 footprint. And because now all these homes and buildings have converted their furnaces and hot water heaters and boilers into a mini power plant, they're producing some of their own power, and that makes them more resilient to blackouts on the grid. And actually, on the second part, to fully decarbonize, Modern Electron is also developing a hydrogen solution where we can take the input gas streams that already are fed into hundreds of millions of homes and buildings worldwide and convert them on site into clean hydrogen without any CO2 emissions. And then you can feed the hydrogen into your existing energy systems in your buildings and homes, such as producing heat and power, and make it fully clean.
Wow, okay. Let me check I've got that right. You have the capability to turn natural gas coming into a person's home into hydrogen on site.
Yes. It's not easy. That's why we have a lot of engineers and scientists on the team.
Yeah, I was looking through, your team or online or on your company's website, and it's an impressive looking team. A lot of engineers, a lot of technical sort of backgrounded people, which is very well explained by what it is that you're doing. Okay, that's interesting. So on the kind of former product or offering there, does that power have to be used in real time, or does it come with some kind of storage solution?
It does not have to be used in real time if you have a battery, but that's not necessary for our technology. Think of us as a generator. We produce the electricity. It's up to the end user and the system in your home on how you want to do it and use that power. We would actually consider the most common application is to just use the power immediately. We're intentionally generating power that's below the base load of the home, slightly below, so that all the electricity can be used instantaneously in your home and shave off the electricity that you need to buy from the utility that is more expensive. That being said, if you already have an electric car or if you have a home battery, of course, the electricity can be stored there as well, and that produces additional arbitrage opportunities.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I was doing a little bit of research, and I understand that one of the core aims behind the technology is to provide resiliency in the case of power outages and things like that. So it is what it can offer that when you're heating your home, you can also provide a kind of a subset of whatever power you might need, the essentials to keep you going through. You know, for example, in Texas earlier this year when we had that big cold snap and the grid went down for quite a considerable amount of time, might that technology come in and be used at that point?
You've nailed it 100%. Now, that's one of the multiple values of the technology, right? But as you pointed out, unfortunately, us in the United States, this is a pretty severe problem, and this could be a lifesaver. So it's quite ironic, actually. First of all, to give you a sense of the scale, 9 million homes in the last winter season in the USA lost electrical power for more than a day straight, more than 24 hours. And the irony is that a lot of these places in cold homes, they have plenty of energy in the home already. What I mean by that is about 50% of home energy in the USA is heat. That's mostly coming from natural gas. And about 80% of energy in Europe actually is heat, also usually from natural gas. And the natural gas grid tends to be fine during a blackout. So the natural gas grid is about 300 times more stable than the electricity grid, if you count it in terms of outages. However, when you lose your electricity, even when gas is still flowing through your home, you lose your heat regardless. And that's because your furnace and boiler also require electricity to run. And so that's ironic and tragic. And in the case of Texas, right, that's pretty extreme. Like 100 people froze to death. Just imagine, that's mind-boggling. Yeah. But even for many people who don't, it's not life-threatening. It's still a hugely traumatic event, right? You have to go to a hotel, your kids are freezing, and in many cases, your water pipes freeze and they burst and they cost $10,000 in damages. Mm. So what we really do to basically make the home immune to blackouts is we make the furnace basically power itself because the fuel's right there. Really, if you think of a furnace or a boiler, it's got half the infrastructure of a power plant already there, right? It's got the fuel coming in, it combusts it. It's like half a power plant. All we're adding is our own special tech inside so that it generates its own electricity. And therefore, even if the grid goes out, your furnace will keep running indefinitely. It'll never run out unlike a backup battery. So yeah, sorry, long answer to a simple question.
No.
But this gets me pretty excited because this, as you said, right, in the case of Texas, this really, really hurt people.
Yeah, well,
and we can prevent that.
Yeah, it's totally understandable that you're excited by it. You know, as you say, it can save lives. It's not just, you know, saving on carbon emissions. But, you know, yeah, it has the potential to save lives. So that's really cool. So it's become quite clear to me, you know, there are several drivers which sort of inspired the your co-founding of the company. But I want to go back into your mind at the beginning of the company and sort of find out what the you know, the switch flick was. What was the kind of eureka moment that made you think, hold on, like we're wasting all of this energy. There must be a better way. Where was that moment?
I wish I can tell you one of those romantic stories you hear in the history books where Archimedes stood up on a bathtub and said, eureka, right? But I think it was definitely more of an evolution. What really happened was I was working with an incubator in Seattle that develops deep tech, things that can really move the needle for human civilization. And it was very clear that energy, of course, was existential to human quality of life, as well as a key ingredient in combating climate change. And they basically tasked me with looking at one specific problem, which is the conversion of heat into electricity. And today, I think this is still true, even after the exponential rise of renewables in the past two decades. Still, 80% of all electricity generated on the planet is run through a steam engine, really a steam turbine that was invented in the time of Queen Victoria, in the last industrial revolution, a long, long time ago. So you basically, no matter whether it's like an old dirty power source, like a coal-fired power plant, natural gas is newer and cleaner, or even nuclear, something as fancy as nuclear, that seems modern. End of the day, all that they're doing is they're kind of effectively burning the fuel, whether it's like classical burning or a nuclear reaction, and then generating heat. That's all they're doing. And then they use that heat to boil water. The water drives a big fan. The fan spins an old magnet, and that generates electricity. 80% of all electricity today generated through that process, one century old. And so it was clear that if you can make an improvement on that somehow, that would be a civilizational scale contribution. And it was quite timely. I started working on all of this 10 years ago. That was the year of Fukushima. Right. And one of our sister companies, actually, from the same incubator, was a nuclear power startup, probably the world's largest nuclear power startup called TerraPower. Absolutely amazing stuff.
Yeah.
At the time, they were working on a nuclear fission process that can use other people's nuclear waste as their fuel, which is awesome, right? Like usually people will have a lot of trouble getting rid of nuclear waste. They can take someone else's waste and use it as fuel. Mm. But after all that fancy nuclear physics, they still realized that they needed to, you know, basically boil water, run a steam engine. And Fukushima reminded everybody that it's a horrible idea to put a high steam pressure, like put water next to a power plant.
Yeah.
It's a recipe for the whole thing to basically burst. But there's no better way. So that was the start of the problem statement. Hey, Tony, can you go figure out, survey a bunch of different technologies that are newer? Do we have anything better than running a big mechanical engine?
Yeah.
And so that was the beginning. And then things, of course, evolved.
Okay. It's interesting you mentioned TerraPower. I think the time I've heard of that was by watching a documentary about Bill Gates. Am I right there? Is that something that he's involved in? And you've done a bit of work yourself for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Is that at all related in any way?
That's not related to Modern Electron. That was a past life where they were kind enough to allow me to dabble in things like infectious disease prevention, sanitation, such as reinvent the toilet and malnutrition. So that was a separate consulting effort back when I was still a freelancer, free agent. I did all that work pro bono, but that was a lot of fun. And I'm fortunate that they allowed someone who really has no that much experience in global health and development, but has a lot of experience in tech. They allowed me to make some contributions on the technological angle.
Yeah.
That's not directly related to Modern Electron, even though I think the ultimate mission is very similar, right? Which is really help human civilization and give people a better quality of life and try to save the planet. It's just that I think it's very clear to everybody, energy endeavors cannot be a philanthropic endeavor per se. Any solution that's really going to move the CO2 needle is going to have to be economical for folks. That's the only way to scale up.
Yeah.
And you have to scale up to actually move the needle on carbon. And therefore, we're a strictly for-profit endeavor at Modern Electron, even though there's this grand mission of really doing our part to tackle climate change.
Yeah. So do you see it as a scalable exercise? Your technology, do you see that as something that could be used to decarbonize Africa, for example? Do you see this as a potential technology that could be really thought about as a way to net zero there?
Absolutely, but we're not going to start there.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the challenges with introducing new techs. And the matter of fact is Modern Electron has developed brand new technology, and typically you have to scale down the cost curve before it gets to the highest affordability. You've seen this with solar and wind and lithium ion batteries. All took a long time, right? We're hoping with the extra support from industry and a big focus that society has now on decarbonization, that we can make the transition faster. But still, we're going to have to climb down the cost curve. And therefore, our initial markets are in the USA and Europe.
Yeah. On your work, just with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, I kind of was doing a little bit of thinking, kind of looking at your history in preparation for the show. You know, you've worked in banking, academia, healthcare, and now you're in energy. It sounds like it was a tech way through, and you realized you had a good idea. And that's why you have Modern Electron now and the technology you do. And correct me if I'm wrong, but do you feel like energy is the one for you now? Do you feel like you've settled in a sector, or will there be more in the list in 10, 20 years?
I've settled in a sector, I think. As you've seen, my background is a bit of a hot mess. Yes, I've worked in banking, although it was for family reasons. My dad passed away, so I needed to make money until my sister graduated, basically. But I do come from this from a technology angle, right? My training is in physics, so I was educated both physics for my undergrad at Stanford and then a physics PhD at Harvard. And I think from the physics angle, energy has always been interesting because it's clearly the driver of human civilization. I think you can, if you had to bake the Industrial Revolution, that brought us out of a miserable life, right? Like life used to be nasty, British and short, the famous quote. We didn't live very long. We had to work very hard to farm some wheat to feed ourselves. And we died pretty early from all sorts of disease. And if you had to distill that improvement of the Industrial Revolution, which is essentially heat engines, right? Turning energy from other fuel sources into work to replace human labor. Essentially, if you compare a human today in places that are fortunate, such as where you and I live in the developed world, we use 100 times more energy per person compared to our ancestors 200 years ago.
Yeah.
That's basically a difference, right? We use on average about 10 kilowatts if you normalize it by time, whereas the human body is roughly capable of only 100 watts of work if we had to do everything with our own muscles. So that's the Industrial Revolution. So if you can dramatically increase energy access, that is a single best predictor of quality of life. This is still true today. Even the people in Philanthropy Gates Foundation understand this, that energy is the best driver. It's like the best correlator. However, and that's been great, right? We've been using more and more energy. This is how we're going to get people out of poverty, except that we've been doing it with fossil sources and it's accumulated this initially benign thing like CO2. It's not poisonous to your body or anything like that. People were okay for it for a few centuries until we realized, oh, crap. Turns out it has this warming effect, and we're going to ruin our planets if we continue this. So yeah, I think I've done a lot of detours, but that's definitely the problem statement I've worked at for almost my entire professional career.
Yeah.
If you count percentage. And my vision for Modern Electron is for it to become an industrial powerhouse, right? Like we were named as an homage in some sense to General Electric. Unfortunately, Modern Electric was taken, so we named it Modern Electron instead.
Okay.
We want to innovate on many different technologies that can bring forth breakthroughs that can help bring energy to people both more cheaply and also more cleanly.
Yeah. So it's potentially not just these two products that you have now in the long term, and you think that the innovation will continue with that kind of goal in your mind.
That's right. Maybe it's a little bit ambitious and crazy for a company that's only 40 people, but that's the dream long term. Yeah.
You've got to be ambitious, haven't you? Yeah. And I'm aware that you're a serial inventor yourself. Your LinkedIn says that you have over 250 patents in energy and climate, nanotechnology, and biomedical devices as well, which is a really cool record to have. So I guess you're going to continue in that vein. Could you give us like a flavor of some of your patents? And perhaps you can't for legal reasons, but I'm interested about your process and about this crazy number, over 250 patents that you have.
Yeah, so thank you for the kind words. I think reality is always a bit, it's more nuanced, right? Like a lot of other people deserve credit. So first of all, it's 250 patents pending, okay. Only 150 of which have issued. Now, I still understand that's a very big number, right? 150 50 have been officially granted. But typically, first of all, a lot of those patents have a lot of co-inventors. These were coming from a lot of ideation and joint work. And oftentimes I was just one contributor out of many.
Yeah.
And also typically when you file a patent, if you have a really good idea, you don't just file one, you file like several in that family. And therefore that also, you know, bumps up the number. But yeah, I've been very fortunate to work with some very smart and innovative inventors across many different fields. And I think that was one of the beauties of my luck of being able to work in with incubators and with other people. I think we were particularly inventive because we intentionally threw a bunch of people from different disciplines in the same room. That doesn't happen very often, but it turns out when you do that, right, when you throw, I'm a physicist by training, but throw a chemist in there, throw an electrical engineer in there, throw a thermomechanical engineer in there. And like all these people are present, even within Modern Electron, for better or worse, to solve the problems we have to solve, we have to bring in so many disciplines, it's insane. But that also means that you can find the novelty, right? The things that are less seen by individual experts or individually very focused group, because you have that cross-pollination. And that, I think that contributed to a lot of inventions.
Yeah. So what kind of backgrounds do you have of people working at Modern Electron?
Physicists of many flavors, including experimental physicists to computational physicists. We make Jeff Bezos so much money every year. It's not funny. We run these massive simulations in the cloud to model the plasma physics inside some of our technologies. Experimental physicists specializing in everything from material properties all the way to electronic properties. And of course, the corresponding chemists, material scientists, and then thermal engineers, since we deal with high temperature processes for heat into electricity conversion, mechanical engineers to make the mechanical devices. And since we convert heat into electricity, we need electrical engineers. We have wonderful machinists who actually know how to manufacture things, like, you know, move the shape this way so it's actually cheap to make instead of expensive. And even I think I also want to give a shout out to the people who run our HR, run operations, like actually pretty set. I like to joke to the whole company that our head of operations at HR is like the most important person in the company. Like she knows where everything is and how everything works and how we all work together. And if she goes on an extended sick leave, like we're screwed.
Yeah.
But it's not surprising, right? Like to make anything really work in the real world, you need a very diverse team.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And one of the things that I hope we can do with this podcast is to kind of celebrate the kind of diverse teams that that there hopefully are across the sector. So that's great to hear. Just moving back to your work history, and I'm hearing a lot of it sounds like your experiences have all been, there's been a kind of common thread tying them all together. It doesn't quite look like the sort of switching around between industries that perhaps on paper it might. And you described it as a hot mess, but would you wish to go back and change any of that? Or are you happy with the kind of path you've taken?
I'm very happy with the path I've taken. I don't really think it's possible to revisit the past, right? But I think I definitely went through a bit of searching, right? Like definitely, I went straight into Wall Street after I graduated from undergrad because, again, family reasons.
Yeah.
And really, it was the financial crisis. That's a deep dark secret on my resume, although it's on LinkedIn, right? But I was at Goldman Sachs during the financial crisis of 2008-2009, helping them orchestrate The Big Short. In some sense, it was an intellectually invigorating experience, but it wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. So the moment my sister graduated, actually, it was really the moment that she showed up on her new job after graduation, and they actually let her like have the job, right? Because it was a the economy was terrible back then. A lot of people's job offers were rescinded. But the moment that she it was clear, crystal clear, that she was actually going to be able to work, I gave in my resignation. And actually, I had already applied to graduate school in physics before then. It was always a temporary thing. Mm. I had applied to graduate school already in undergrad and told them I would defer entering graduate school in order to work for a few years.
Right.
But frankly, I have a lot of gratitude for that experience, even though that was hard and not what I wanted, not really my life mission, and frankly, a bit controversial, but it was a good growing experience when I first graduated. I had to grow up really, really quickly, right? In the epicenter of the financial crisis. I think it was a maturing experience for me. It helped me really understand what mattered to me.
Yeah, I can totally imagine. And it wasn't that you sort of seemed to discover.
Yeah.
No, okay. So switching from the past towards the future, I wanted to get a bit of your insight. You said that you think modern electron's future is in continuing to innovate, becoming, you know, a staple and a real driver of progress. But do you have any idea of what sort of technologies those might be in? And I had a thought about where your technology currently sort of sits with potential electrification of heat. And I guess that your technology works best if there's gas running into a household. Both the technologies you described earlier require, you know, some kind of combustion of a fuel. So if you're electrifying heat, where does modern electron's technology sit?
So we're tackling the gas problem because we see that as one of the elephants in the room in the decarbonization story, right? There are other solutions to electrify heat. I think one of the often quoted ideals is that, hey, let's use renewables and then electrify heating in your home and basically the best technology for that today is something that's actually pretty old. It's called the electric heat pump.
Yeah.
And you can use that to basically, it's like an air conditioner that can run in reverse. So you run electricity and it pushes heat in winter from the outside to the inside. Mm. That's pretty neat. That's a pretty good solution. And in fact, it's a pretty old technology. It's been around for 40, 50 years. It already works. It's not improving that quickly. And so the issue is the market has had time to adopt it. And this is what's happening. In new buildings, if you can build in the right insulation, the right electricity, the right radiators and so forth, you can make an electric heat pump work. And we should probably do that. But the big elephant in the room that I was referring to is 80% of all houses and buildings that are going to be here in 2050 have already been built. And the real challenge is how do you start reducing emissions from all these existing buildings? And it's turning out that electric heat pumps have too high a retrofit cost to make economic sense for these existing buildings. That's been the challenge. So we're sort of taking the attitude that, okay, other folks are working on electric heat pumps. It should get a lot of new adoption in new buildings. And you can see this in Europe. Europe has been pushing electric heat pumps, right, for about 15 years. And Germany recently celebrated a milestone. 50% of new buildings are now installing electric heat pumps. Awesome. That's the way we want to go. In existing buildings, which, by the way, is like 85% of heating appliance sales, the number is, I think, around 5%.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the challenge, right? So we're taking the sense of, okay, we're going to need other solutions on the table. And that's why we are actually dealing with gas, which sounds like, again, pretty controversial thing, but we think it's absolutely necessary. And I can get pretty into tech details here, but it might be quite important. I've been talking for a while. Do you want me to jump in?
No, go for that. Yeah, I'd be interested to hear it. And, you know, maybe for some of our listeners, if there are details that need explaining, then you know, by all means do that. But I think that'd be interesting to hear.
Yeah. So I've already described the issue in terms of cost to the end consumer, right? If you were just replacing your boiler in an apartment, it's basically way cheaper than retrofitting an electric heat pump. In some places, you don't even have the space to retrofit an electric heat pump, which is why it's so expensive, right? You need to do this massive build out. But that's just the issue at home. It's really not economical at home, but there's a societal infrastructure issue, and this affects total cost and timeline. So to give you a sense of scale, in the United States, the issue with heating, just building heating, is that it's peaky. So taking just residential homes, so no commercial buildings, no power plants, no industrial processes, just residential homes. They use most of their gas in wintertime and usually at night, right, when it's cold and people come back home from work. The peak is about 5 to 11 p.m., as you would expect in winter. That peak energy demand that occurs in winter, just from gas in residential homes, exceeds 1 terawatt. That is more power than all electricity generated nationwide from the United States from every single source.
Yeah,
which of course is like 10x wind and solar.
Yeah.
All electricity generated today for every application that we already need to use, right? We can't just give it up. Still can't match the peak heat demand from gas in residential homes. So we don't have enough generation. And by necessity, right, that also means we don't have enough transmission and distribution. We can't just assume the electrical grid can carry suddenly 2x the amount of power it can carry today. No way, right? So you need to, so we don't have enough transmission and distribution. Furthermore, think about it. Is solar going to be useful for electrifying heat? You have solar where it's sunny in the daytime, usually in the south. That is the inverse time and location of where you need heat.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, we've known this problem for a long time. All the industry experts know this. And when we did a deep dive, we were like, oh, crap. We need other solutions on the table.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're going with like efficiency. Let's first stretch every single value we can get out of the gas we're already using. A lot of that energy is actually wasted. Let's extract way more useful energy out of it. And that improves efficiency. And that would make an impact in reducing emissions quicker. And then that's also why we're working on hydrogen, because we see that we're not going to be able to fully electrify the economy. We're going to need additional fuel sources, and let's make them clean.
Yeah. So it seems like what you're saying is there's no real silver bullet for this. You need a kind of combination of technologies. Heat pumps, great where you can, but they don't make sense in some places.
We're not a silver bullet either. We only make sense in some places. Like our first technology doesn't make sense if you don't need the heat. No one, I think, in the world has a silver bullet. We're going to need 100 innovations to solve climate change.
Yeah, yeah, that's quite right. We're sort of running close to time now. So I'd just like to end with just one more question, which is, and I think we've touched on it, but I think it'd be a nice place to kind of end on with a sort of concise answer, hopefully, if you have one. And it's, what would you like your professional legacy to be? Imagining yourself in some decades and you're retired, and you finished up with Modern Electron or whoever you're working for, until that point, what would you like to say that you had done?
You've noticed I'm not good with conciseness, but I think of like two charts, right, over time. And one chart is the amount of CO2 reduced. And one chart is some kind of value provided to people. And of course, I believe in capitalism as a solution to a lot of problems. That's why I'm running a business. But I can think of this as like money saved for people, right? That's a very tangible way to say we've made people's lives better. So like, that's it, right? Like just have two charts across time through my professional career, and hopefully they both look like J curves, right? Amounts of money saved for people, lives improved, and CO2 emissions that were reduced.
Yeah. That sounds like a good legacy to have. I'm going to thank you so much for joining us. This has been such an interesting chat. I've really enjoyed it, and it's great to meet you. Thanks, Tony.
Likewise. Thanks for chatting with me. It's been really fun.